From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, 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 what is up, beautiful people? It is May 5th, 2015. Hey, happy Election Day, folks. I'm sure many of you out there are hitting the polls right now, of course, and getting your vote in. And you definitely express your right to vote. It's our American right. Hopefully you all are doing that as we speak, while also, of course, listening to Current Sports. We've got a great show in store for you all today. I will be inviting, of course, Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press. He is the Free Press's, of course, Lions beat writer who does one outstanding job. He will, of course, recap the weekend that was for the Detroit Lions in the NFL draft and break down, of course, Lincoln Tomlinson, Ameer Abdullah, Michael Burton. Talk about the picks and really talk about the best move from the Lions in this year's draft, the worst move, and so on and so forth. Again, if you want to throw out a question to Dave while he's on the air with me, again, the number is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll also talk about American Pharoah. How about that incredible thoroughbred who took home, of course, the Kentucky Derby over the weekend? Can American Pharoah win the Triple Crown? Something that hasn't been done since 1978. We'll chat about that. Also, it's Tuesday, and each and every Tuesday, we bring you Top 5 Tuesday. And on Top 5 Tuesday today, we bring to you and break down the top 5 overhyped sporting events of all time. You don't want to miss all of that and so much more. But hey, as custom here on Current Sports, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners again for this May 5th. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they currently sit atop the American League Central Division at 17-9, just a half game ahead of the Kansas City Royals. Now, after a day of rest of wrapping up a weekend series against Kansas City, the Tigers, they return to action tonight, playing the first of a three-game series against the Chicago White Sox tonight at 8:10 p.m. Now, Shane Green takes the mound against Jeff Shamira. So you don't want to miss that game. That should be an interesting series out in the shy. All right, last night, the Lansing Lugnuts, they topped the West Michigan Whitecaps in a thrilling 7-6 game at, of course, Cooley Law School Stadium. Now, today's game, which was scheduled for 10:35 a.m. on Grand Slam School Day, has been postponed due to, of course, the weather outside. It's coming down. It's rainy. So the game actually will be rescheduled as a part of a Wednesday doubleheader, which starts at 5:05 p.m. tomorrow. Both games in the doubleheader will be slated for just 7 innings, with approximately 30 minutes separating the conclusion of Game 1 and the start of Game 2. Now, all tickets to today's game may be exchanged for tickets of equal or lesser value to a future Lugnuts game. All right, in NBA playoff action last night, the Chicago Bulls, they beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 1 of that Eastern Conference semifinal, 99-92, the final of last night's matchup. Derrick Rose had 25 points while Paul Gasol added 21. Now, later on that night, the Chris Paulless LA Clippers, they topped the Houston Rockets 117-101. Now, Blake Griffin, he was fantastic last night. He had 26 points, 14 rebounds, and 13 assists for his second straight triple-double to lead six double-digit scores. How about that? Now, in NHL playoff action last night, Brandon Holtby, he made 30 saves for his second career playoff shutout, and Jay Beagle took advantage of a Fortovis bounce to score his first goal of the postseason, giving the Washington Caps a 1-0 victory over the New York Rangers on Monday night for a 2-1 lead in the Eastern Conference semis. All right, and more developing news concerning that shoulder of Manny Pacquiao, who, of course, lost to Floyd Money Mayweather Jr. in the quote-unquote fight of the century on Saturday night. Now, Manny Pacquiao could face disciplinary action from Nevada boxing officials for failing to disclose a shoulder injury before his fight with Floyd. Nevada Athletic Commission Chairman Francisco Arguller, he said on Monday that the state attorney general's office will look at why Pacquiao checked no a day before the fight on a commission questionnaire asking if he had a shoulder injury. Now, Pacquiao is expected to miss 9 to 12 months due to that very injury. All right, now, there are also developments concerning the pay-per-view issues with the fight on Saturday night, which have sparked discussions of piracy. Now, Todd DeBoeuf, he's the president of Top Rank, which promotes Pacquiao, said on Monday that he was concerned about the amount of people who are streaming and watching the fight through Twitter's live streaming app called Periscope. Now, DeBoeuf said he was not sure how many buys were lost from illegal streaming through Periscope, but the parties who own the rights to the fight, the promoters, together with HBO and Showtime, will work with companies they hire to combat piracy to help determine the next step. All right, the future of former UFC lightweight heavyweight champion John Jones has been up in the air ever since, of course, he was stripped of his title by the UFC after an alleged felony hit and run at the end of last month. Now, Maokai Kawa, Jones' longtime manager and confidant, went on Ariel Helwani's The MMA Hour on Monday to discuss his client's future. And in what some might call a shocking revelation, Kawa said Jones may never fight inside an octagon again. Brittany Griner, she opted out of the U.S. Women's National Basketball Team's training camp that began on Monday. The 6'8 star of the Phoenix Mercury was arrested on April 22nd on suspicion of assault after a fight with her fiancé, fellow WNBA player Glory Johnson. Now, Griner, who was expected to be one of the 27 players at the camp, let USA Basketball know her choice over the weekend. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 5th, 2015. Our phone lines are open. Call in at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and leave us a comment there or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, without further ado, how about we start the show?
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart.
Ah, yes. How about that classic, right? Of course, that's Singing in the Rain, the 1952 American musical comedy, of course, directed by the great Gene Kelly. How about that, folks? And the reason, of course, why we're playing that is because if you have looked out your window or if you've been out and about, you know that, it's coming down. It's raining like cats and dogs out there. As I just mentioned in our quick hit headliners, the Lansing Lugnuts game has been postponed and moved to a doubleheader, of course, which will take place tomorrow starting at 5.05 p.m. The Lugnuts with a big, big win. I should say a thrilling win over the West Michigan Whitecaps yesterday. 7-6 game at Cooley Law School Stadium. A very entertaining game, yes, but because of the rain today, that game, too, is being postponed. So definitely hope that we get to see some baseball action very, very soon. And doubleheader tomorrow. How can you not beat that, right? Doubleheader of baseball, that should be exciting stuff. Well, welcome to the show, ladies and gents. As always, I am your host of WKAR's Current Sports, Al Martin. We've got a fun-filled show in store for you all, filled with a lot of insight, specifically when talking about, of course, the Detroit Lions, who, in many people's eyes, had a pretty good NFL draft over the weekend. Now, a man who had been covering that draft wire to wire is, of course, Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer Dave Burkett, who feels pretty good. You know, when looking at least his articles and looking at, his Freep.com videos discussing the Lions in the draft, he feels pretty good about, you know, what the Lions were able to do in Chicago over the weekend. So we'll break down the draft for the Lions and talk about the best move from this year's draft, the worst move. Heck, we'll even get his thoughts on Jameis Winston being taken as the first pick in this year's draft. So, yeah, if you got a question for Dave, again, he'll be on during our second segment of today's show. All you got to do is call in at 517-355-9527, 517 855-9527. And just an exciting week here on Current Sports. I mean, tomorrow I'll be actually chatting with Greg Campy, who is the head coach of the Oakland University men's basketball team. He's been doing one fantastic job with that squad. They actually are just coming off a pretty good year. And how about Jalen Hayes? Man, has he been something or what, folks? Of course, Jalen was an outstanding basketball player for Lansing Sexton here in the area, has gone on to become a Golden Grizzly, and has had a, you know, he had a very, very good year with the team last year. So we'll talk about Jalen. And also, the primary reason why we're going to have Greg on is to talk about a pretty cool event that that concerns, of course, Tom Izzo, you know, and also Michigan men's basketball coach John Beilein. And, you know, the event is very cool because, you know, it's entitled the Coaches versus Cancer Auction, in which you all out there can actually bid on a coach. And the highest bidder, I believe, will get a chance to play golf with one of those coaches, either Greg Campy, Tom Izzo, or John Beilein. So, you know, I'll talk with Greg about, you know, how fighting cancer has become really a personal mission of his. And also talk about, of course, Jalen Hayes and, you know, the newly installed blacktop court at OU and so much more. So you don't want to miss that chat on tomorrow's show. And also we'll give you a sneak peek preview of course, Current Sports TV. My guest this week happens to be Mike Ingram, you know, who is the men's basketball coach over at Lansing Community College, who had one outstanding year. Talk about an outstanding year for him. He was actually named Coach of the Year for his respective region. So you don't want to miss that chat. Just a fantastic week here on the show. I am certainly excited about it. Before we dive into our first subject here on the show, I want to invite, of course, the man behind the glass, Current Sports radio engineer, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing, man?
Doing good. A little bit drenched from the bike ride over. Like you said, it's raining cats and dogs. And
yeah,
a little bit of parakeets, whatever else helps hold an animal you want to.
So you biked over here, Isaac? Oh, my goodness, man.
I did, yeah.
That's
through
tough.
The elements.
How far do you stay on? You stay on campus, I'm assuming, right?
I do. I stay in Mason Hall.
Okay.
It's right by Snyder Phillips, so okay. Right off Grand River.
Man, that's kind of a long bike, too, my brother. Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, hopefully you guys are staying dry out there. At least we can, you know, harp on one positive thing when it comes to the weather. At least it's not, you know, 30 degrees, right? And that's not snow coming down. At least it's rain, right? So, but yeah, Isaac, you're always on time, my brother. And I tell you what, we got a fantastic show. I want to start by talking about, of course, a story that I find, you know, quite comical, to say the least. Now, you know, this is an interesting article that this is actually written by Steve Schrader of the Detroit Free Press, talking about, of course, Justin Verlander, who is, of course, still on the disabled list. And, you know, JV is still traveling with the team, you know, even though, you know, he's injured, he's on the DL, he's still traveling with the team, sort of buying his time before, of course, he comes back with this squad and possibly makes a healthy return. Now, with him being on the DL and him still being on the road trip, of course, you know, this team is in Chicago preparing to take on the Chicago White Sox in a 3-game road series. And during Monday's day off in the Chi, I tell you what, JV decided to post a couple of surf and turf Instagram photos of himself, one having dinner with girlfriend Kate Upton at their favorite Chicago steakhouse, and, you know, another of them just sort of maxing and relaxing and so on and so forth. But I tell you what, the society that we live in, Isaac, anytime that an athlete posts anything of some sorts via social media, you better believe that the public out there is going to have something to say about it. It's just the society we live in, especially, you know, with it being so social media driven, sort of with a hands-on approach where it makes it so interesting because back in the day, you didn't have social media back in the 80s and 70s and so on and so forth, where you didn't have this personal connection with an athlete, where if you did have a Twitter or an Instagram account, you get to follow your athletes and see what they're doing and actually comment on their daily lives. Now, with, of course, the social media forum, Instagram, if someone posts a photo, you can comment on it, and, you know, some people read those comments, and some people don't. JV apparently is one of those guys who certainly reads those comments. Now, after he posted a photo of, you know, him enjoying, you know, himself with Kate Upton, here were a few of the comments that were said about JV and his personal life. Quote, "Hey, Verlander, let's concentrate on baseball a little bit more. Quote, you should really get back on the mound." Here's another one. "He needs to get back in shape and get on the hill." Here's another one. "There would probably be a lot less haters if you posted less pictures with Kate and more with Al Albuquerque, less to be jealous of." Wow. Interesting. You know, because I tell you what, you know, in the society we live in today, Isaac, athletes really, you know, first off, they have to watch everything they do now. because, you know, any little thing they do can instantly be uploaded via social media. And if it's something not kosher with what they're supposed to be doing, they could be disciplined for that kind of stuff. So you really got to watch what you do. But I feel as though that us as fans in the game and just us as media, we sometimes forget that these athletes at the end of the day are humans. These athletes make, you know, I'm not saying that Justin Verlander made a mistake here by posting a few pictures of him and his girlfriend on social media. I actually feel the quite the opposite. But, you know, fans out there, they think that these athletes should live, breathe, and eat their profession 24/7. And I totally disagree with that. We forget that they're humans. Why can't JV just enjoy a night on the town with his girlfriend? I didn't have anything wrong with these pictures. Did you see any quarrel with this, Isaac?
No, not at all. You see athletes sometimes when they're injured doing other physical, like, you know, strenuous activities. And that's something that I do have a little bit of a problem with. Such as, who was the NBA player who hurt himself bowling?
Oh, man, an NBA player hurt himself bowling? I never heard of that one.
I'll think of it later and bring it up. But, yeah, I remember, you know, there are several players who enjoy bowling or playing baseball or something like that when they're hurt.
Right.
And that's a different story than going to the zoo with your girlfriend, you know? And if it's right. Kate Upton, he's got every right to be enjoying his time with her.
Exactly. Now, that's my other point. This is Kate Upton we're talking about. I mean, one of the most recognizable models out there. I mean, if you don't take her out, you run the risk of losing one of the most popular figures out there. So JV, you got to do what you got to do, my man. And, you know, it's so interesting how social media has really impacted the everyday lives of athletes and you know, famous people alike, for that matter. It doesn't have to be an athlete. It could be a movie star, an artist, for that matter, a musical artist. Because, you know, if you look at some of the athletes back in the day, you know, to put a more local feel on it, you know, I was actually out and about, you know, at a restaurant, and you know, one of the when I was eating, you know, one of the restaurant hostess, they had, I guess, recognized me from Current Sports. They're avid listeners. Thanks a lot out there. And you know, we just started chit-chatting about, you know, sports, and we got on a discussion about the Lions. And you know, I'm chatting with this individual, and they're bringing up Bobby Lane. They were a big Bobby Lane fan, and you know, Bobby Lane, of course, famed quarterback for the Detroit Lions. And, you know, they were just kind of recounting how Bobby Lane back in the day for the Detroit Lions, I mean, he was just such he had an out there personality. I mean, there's constant stories about Bobby Lane parking on Detroit sidewalks, Bobby Lane having, you know, problems with drinking left and right, Bobby Lane actually drinking before games and showing up to game football games drunk. I mean, if that sort of stuff happened in today's age, oh, you better believe it will be frontline headline news, folks. And the thing about, you know, that era of football or sports in general was that, again, you know, if Bobby Lane did engage in this sort of activity, just imagine if social media was invented back then. I mean, Bobby Lane would probably be suspended from the NFL, maybe booted out the NFL. So it's just so interesting how that dynamic is now transitioned into just modern day-by-day life when it comes to athletes today. And even the stories about Babe Ruth and his, you know, his problems with women and drinking and so on and so forth. But it wasn't as amplified as it would be today because of the social media form. So I'm basically saying that. And, you know, I it was very comical. So after these photos were posted, JV actually went to his Instagram page on Monday night and defended himself. And, you know, he posted a picture of him just sort of laying on the bed and saying, quote, "Dear haters, I have heard you. Therefore, I have done all of the rehab I can possibly do already. I shall not move from my bed nor enjoy my life whatsoever for the rest of the day. So you think I'm trying. Hashtag you're welcome. Hashtag hate on haters. Hashtag love the real fans." So I thought that was a pretty cool shot back at the fans just to say, relax. Can I be a normal human being as well? You know, I mean, when you go home from work, you're not live, eating, and breathing your job at home, okay? I mean, I'm just saying, folks. I'm just saying. Pipe down a little bit, all right? All right, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to transition now into this subject, Isaac, because it's one that I feel like every single year we really, and you know, it's kind of a nice segue into today's Top 5 Tuesday subject, which is the top 5 overhyped sporting events. We always get overhyped about a certain horse who ends up winning the Kentucky Derby because, you know, we have been waiting since 1978. 1978, folks. That's a long time to be waiting on the next Triple Crown winner in horse racing. Of course, last year, all the talk you heard was about the famed horse, California Chrome, who was a fantastic thoroughbred, to say the least. I mean, California Chrome, he had fantastic speed. I mean, just an adorable horse. An adorable horse to watch out there racing. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then, immediately, after California Chrome, because I believe California Chrome won the Kentucky Derby, and then went on to win the Preakness, and lost at the Belmont Stakes. Am I right, Isaac? Yeah.
I believe so.
And then looking at it, especially after, you know, California Chrome had won the first two races, just having one more race to don the Triple Crown title, I mean, everybody went through the roof. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, I'm like, oh my goodness, okay, he's won, you know, two now. I think he'll get the job done now. I mean, because it's tough, let alone to win one of those three events, let alone two. So I bought into the hype, and then, of course, at the end of the day, California Chrome was not able to accomplish that insurmountable feat that, again, we haven't seen since 1978. So now, of course, the hype has been built up once again. The two horses who everyone was talking about, of course, entering Saturday's Kentucky Derby happened to be, of course, American Pharoah, fantastic horse, and Dartman. Those are the two horses that I heard left and right that have the legitimate shot at winning the Triple Crown and winning the Kentucky Derby. Of course, American Pharoah had the best odds to win, and the horse got the job done. Got the job done, folks. So now the hype machine has been brought up left and right. I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning, or yesterday morning, I should say, on ESPN, and Mike Golic believes that American Pharoah is going to win the Triple Crown. He loves the horse, so on and so forth. But again, I've heard this hype before. So if I had to, you know, sort of break this thing down, if you want my opinion on whether or not American Pharoah is going to win the Triple Crown, I'm not buying into the hype this time, folks. I don't think this horse is going to do it. Isaac, do you think this horse is going to win the Triple Crown?
No.
Why?
Like you've said, we've seen this so many times before. Not only California Chrome, but do you remember Big Brown, I believe, from 2008?
Right.
He won the Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes, and we're talking about this horse after one major Triple Crown win.
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous. This is the most, you talked about overhyped sporting events. This is one of the most anticipated, you know, victories and whatnot. And then people just take it and run so far with it. We cannot judge this off of one race. That's ridiculous.
Right, exactly. And at the end of the day, it was an impressive win for American Pharoah. But there are a few intangibles that just really elude people when talking about this conversation on whether or not a horse can win the Triple Crown and the reason why they get so overhyped about it. Now, one, first off, the amount of horses that are involved in every race is not like it was back in 1978 when Affirmed had won the Triple Crown. Actually, when breaking this thing down, back in 1978, Affirmed faced a total of 20 horses on its way to win the Triple Crown. That's a total throughout those three races, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes, Affirmed faced 20 horses total. Folks, American Pharoah alone faced 17 horses in the Kentucky Derby, in the entire Kentucky Derby. So, first off, when you talk about the disparity in the horses that American Pharoah has to go and beat from the Kentucky Derby on all the way to the Belmont Stakes, I mean, that's a ton of horses, folks. That's like more than double than what Affirmed had to go through as a 1978 Triple Crown winner. That's one of the biggest reasons why I don't think so, because you have more competition out there and more horses involved. Now, this has been a gripe of mine just about every single year that we've talked about a horse possibly winning the Triple Crown, Isaac. And this is the gripe that I have. Now, if you look at this, which is, again, I think it's totally unfair how, you know, and just looking at two horses here, Materiality and Carpe Diem, who are fantastic horses. Actually, Carpe Diem had a pretty high odd to possibly win the Kentucky Derby as well. If you look at those two horses alone, fantastic thoroughbreds as well, they are taking the Preakness race off and will be competing in the Belmont Stakes, meaning that they will be fresher horses to possibly compete against American Pharoah if American Pharoah does win at the Preakness. That's not fair. If you're gonna compete for a Triple Crown and be involved in this fantastic sporting event, in this fantastic run, I believe that every single horse from the very start, those that compete in the Kentucky Derby, have to compete in the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes. If you don't, you're not allowed to just jump a race and compete in the last one. I just don't think that's fair. That's not, how is that fair to American Pharoah, who ideally, if he does win the Preakness, will be competing in all three races while a horse gets to skip, one horse gets to skip a race? I mean, come on, is that fair? I don't agree with that at all.
No, that's not fair at all. I mean, like you said, there needs to be regulation so that if you don't compete in all three, you can't compete in one.
Because exactly.
That's not fair to American Pharoah. That's not fair to Big Brown or any horses before that who were going for that honor of the Triple Crown. But again, it's like you said, if American Pharoah can win the Preakness, that's what we need to be talking about. Mm-hmm. If he can win the Preakness, and then we can focus on the Triple Crown, though.
Right, exactly. I feel like a lot of people are just jumping the gun right now. They want a Triple Crown winner so bad that they're jumping the gun and saying, oh, yeah, American Pharoah certainly has a chance. And they want something to talk about as well, you know what I mean? So I definitely see where they're going. But, again, I think we are certainly jumping the gun here. But, again, yeah, it's not fair how, you know, a horse who competed in the Kentucky Derby can skip a race and compete in the last race, which would be the Belmont Stakes, and possibly knock off a Triple Crown possibility in American Pharoah. I just don't agree with that. Don't think it's fair at all. That rule should have been changed. Also, this isn't a weak year of horses. I keep watching, you know, on ESPN left and right, those in analyzed horse racing saying that, you know, the talent pool in this year's Triple Crown race is unbelievably deep. I mean, you got, again, I named two horses who I think could definitely, if, you know, both of these horses are skipping the Preakness, but both of these horses, when they come back to compete in the Belmont Stakes, could win the Belmont Stakes without a doubt. Carpe Diem, Materiality. I mean, it's an unbelievable pool of horses this year. And again, it hasn't been done since 1978, folks. So if you are harping on any sort of consistency here that would give you hope that this could happen in 2015, that's all it is, folks, is just hope. I love the Triple Crown, though. It's fun to watch. You know, and what makes the Triple Crown so great, Isaac, is that it is one of those events that doesn't happen, you know, on a regular basis throughout the year. It happens one time throughout the year. You got three incredible races. It's not like we watch horse racing on a regular basis. So when it does happen, you're glued to your TV. And it doesn't last for, you know, 5 hours. Now, there are pre-races before the big race. I'm not sitting there watching the pre-races before the Kentucky Derby. I actually just watched the Kentucky Derby, and that's about it. And it's unbelievable just to see the training and preparation that these jockeys and owners put in to have their horse as the big money getter. It's unbelievable. It's a fantastic event. So I absolutely love it. What do you think, folks? Will American Pharoah be the first Triple Crown winner since 1978? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And hey, if you want to talk Detroit Lions football, our phone lines are also open to do that, because right after this break, I'll be chatting with Dave Burkett, Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer. Dave will talk about the moves that the Lions made in Chicago in this year's NFL draft and give a season prediction on just how good the Lions will be next year. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Hey, happy Election Day, folks. That's right. It is the primary, and I'm looking here on Instagram, and a few of my followers here have already hit the polls and let their voice be heard. I hope you all are having a great one out there. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Of course, I have to remind you all about Current Sports TV. This week, I will be sitting down with Mike Ingram. That's right, Mike. He's a fantastic guy, folks, and pretty cool stuff because Mike Ingram, of course, he's the head men's basketball coach at Lansing Community College. And Mike was named the Michigan Community College Athletic Association Western Conference Coach of the Year. Now, Mike and I will, of course, chat about that honor along with the success of this year's team, recruiting at the community college level, the health of basketball in high school. And, you know, I definitely want to dive into the question with Mike, whether or not, you know, kids are learning the fundamentals of the game the right way at a young age. So definitely want to dive into that, of course, with Mike. So, again, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. Now, of course, we hope to get Dave Burkett, Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer, on the line right now. Of course, this is live radio, and Dave, of course, is not picking up. Come on, Dave, you're killing me, man. Hopefully we'll keep working the phone, and hopefully can get him very, very soon. I found this story very intriguing, though. Of course, the talk of the town since Saturday has been about Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Manny Pacquiao. You guys heard my thoughts on yesterday's Current Sports concerning the fight. That fight certainly not living up to the hype. I wasted $100, and I'm sure many of you out there listening did the same thing. This fight was certainly overpublicized. And really, again, and you know, going back to it really quickly here, folks, if you want to blame anyone on your disappointment, don't blame the media. Don't blame Floyd Mayweather Jr. because Floyd did what Floyd always does. His fights have never been exciting. If you're going to blame someone, blame yourself for buying into the hype, just like I did, and blame Manny Pacquiao for giving a subpar effort, folks. And, you know, talking about that subpar effort, news, of course, broke concerning Manny Pacquiao right after that fight and his shoulder. Now, you know, interesting story here because the Boxing Commission in Nevada is now possibly going to reprimand Manny Pacquiao due to really just sort of, I wouldn't say faking his injury, but not letting the commission know of how serious his injury was. Now, of course, it concerns his shoulder, and you know, it looks as though Manny Pacquiao is going to have surgery. He's going to be out from boxing for 9 to 12 months due to that shoulder. And, you know, he actually, when the Nevada Athletic Commission, you know, listed a, you know, I guess basically a sheet when it comes to his health, they said that Manny Pacquiao checked no a day before the fight on a commission questionnaire asking if he had a shoulder injury. And then, of course, the news popped out after the fight that Manny Pacquiao wasn't 100% healthy. Now, first off, I think that's an excuse. You know, Manny Pacquiao was healthy enough to get in that ring and fight. Mayweather came out, and I thought it was a great rebuttal when he took the podium and said, "Hey, I had injuries too. My hands were hurting. I got shoulder problems too, but I still went out there and fought. I'm giving no excuses here." And with that being said, you know, if it is said that Manny Pacquiao did, you know, well, he certainly had an injury here. Again, he's going to have surgery on the shoulder. But again, I just think it's just an excuse as to why Manny lost. Now, I don't like excuses when it comes to any sport for that matter, let alone the sport of boxing. Now, Floyd Mayweather actually told ESPN Stephen A. Smith in a text today that he would be open to a rematch after Manny Pacquiao recovers from shoulder surgery to repair that tear in his rotator cuff, saying, quote, "I will fight him in a year after his surgery." That's what Mayweather texted Stephen A. Smith on the heels of his unanimous decision over Pacquiao and, of course, the richest fight ever. Now, very intriguing stuff, because the question now lies out there, Isaac. You know, if this fight does happen, would you really pay for that?
No, I'd love it for it to happen. You know, I'd love there to be a rematch, but I would not love to see a rematch because I think it would end the exact same way with the exact same disappointment. How both you and I were strong believers and advocates for Pacquiao, and he did disappoint. And I'm not wasting money on that again. I'm not sure if you will, but no. I'll just watch the ESPN recap.
That's right. I will not waste my good money on that because I was just so disappointed in the fight to begin with. After that 12th round bell rang, I'm sitting there like, I kind of had the same reaction that Mike Tyson had when Mike Tyson took to Twitter later on that night saying, "This is what we waited for. This is what we waited for. 5 years for this. Underwhelming. I think he said hashtag underwhelming. Boxing just isn't like it used to be, man. I think if Floyd Money Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, if they want a big payday from this, this is the only scenario I can see these two boxers having a huge payday from this fight. It won't come from pay-per-view numbers because I feel as though the casual sports fan out there, really the only people who enjoyed that fight on Saturday are the real die-hard boxing fans who love to break down the fight, the sweet science of boxing, because Mayweather is a magician in the ring. When you look at the way Floyd Mayweather fights and the way he picks and chooses his, when to hit and when to, and when to go back into a defensive stand, it's really remarkable what he does as a defensive fighter, and I respect that, but it is not eye candy. It's not eye candy whatsoever. And the casual sports fan out there was looking for a brawl. They were looking for Manny Pacquiao to be so aggressive. This is what I was looking for. Manny Pacquiao to be so aggressive and really force Mayweather's hand and injure Mayweather. I mean, and really get up in there, at least cut the man. But Manny Pacquiao was sort of lackadaisical once he realized that he couldn't really break that defense. As the rounds went on, Pacquiao became less and less aggressive. And that was just unfortunate to see. But this is the reason. This is the only way this fight is going to generate a ton of money here, Isaac. Because I believe that Manny Pacquiao, being a representative of the Philippines, because it was remarkable going online and actually seeing the pictures of really the entire country watching the fight, rooting for Manny Pacquiao. He has become an icon. He is their athlete. He's like their Michael Jordan, how Michael was here in America. The only way this fight will generate a lot of money is if Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, more specifically Floyd Mayweather, agrees to fight in the Philippines. I could see that. I could see, kind of like how Ali and Foreman fought in Africa, just at a different location. But this one, would be off the charts because who wouldn't in the Philippines, knowing the sort of rigmarole that Manny Pacquiao has, who would not go to that fight? You know what I mean? There's a chance here in America that people would be turned off from it. But Manny Pacquiao fighting in the Philippines, it would be a packed house. The hoopla would be insane. Am I right here, Isaac?
I'd love to see that. You're exactly right. That would be thrilling. And like you said, it would be a throwback to the Ali Foremans, the great fights of old that we kind of expected and did not get on Saturday night. But no, I'm not sure if I'd pay to watch it, but I would definitely be intrigued to see that happen.
Now, the question lies is whether or not, of course, Floyd Mayweather will agree to those terms and go over there. And I don't know if Floyd's doing it. I don't know if Floyd likes to be in enemy territory like that. Because he plays the role of the villain. He loves playing the role of the villain, and he would certainly be a huge villain if he went over there to the Philippines and fought Manny Pacquiao. But I don't know if Floyd Mayweather would agree to that. Maybe if he sees the dollar signs. Maybe if he sees the estimates for that fight and the money it would generate if he was to go over there and fight Manny. Maybe he'd be interested in doing that. Who knows? But I just don't know. I know I wouldn't pay for that fight. I'll probably just catch the re-air of it next week on HBO or Showtime, whoever airs the fight. But that's all I can see happening when it comes to that. Folks, the phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We are in hopes of, we do have him. We do have him now. Actually, Dave Burkett, Detroit Free Press, Detroit Lions beat reporter. He is on line one right now. We've got him. Dave, how you doing?
Pretty good. Sorry about that. I was on the phone call. I couldn't get off of.
Oh, it's all good. You are a busy man, Dave, I'm sure. Now, I want to talk about the Lions here, of course. That's why we got you on. The Detroit Lions, they actually used four of their picks on offensive players and three on defensive players. On offense, the Lions added an offensive guard, Lincoln Tomlinson, a running back in Amir Abdullah, fullback, Michael Burton, an offensive tackle in Corey Robinson. The defense picked up two cornerbacks, Alex Carter and Quandre Diggs, and a defensive tackle, Gabe Wright. I got to ask you, Dave, what do you think was the best move from the Lions in this year's draft?
Well, I mean, I think you start up top, to move down and, pick up an extra pick next year to get some Mayor Ramirez, who at worst is going to be a backup interior lineman, and And, you know, they got a pretty good player in the first round in Lakin Tomlinson, too. I know a lot of people thought he was going to be probably an early second-round pick, you know, late first. And, you know, just from the Lions standpoint, all those offensive tackles and some of the other top interior linemen were gone, and they really wanted to fill a need on their offensive line. They liked him better than their defensive tackle options, frankly. Malcolm Brown from Texas was the other guy that was kind of in consideration there. And, you know, so I think that was a good move just in total to get a little bit of extra, to get a guy that should be a 6'8 or 10-year starter on your offensive line as well.
Okay, what was the worst move?
Well, I think the one, you know, that left a lot of people scratching their head was drafting a fullback in the fifth round. You know, if it was me running the team, I don't know that I would necessarily draft a fullback, and especially at that point in the draft. But I will say, you look at across the NFL, and you know, there's not a whole lot of fifth rounders that make big contributions as a rookie, and this guy's going to be the Lions fullback, you know, which probably means 20 to 25 plays a game. He's going to play on special teams, and I think if you can get that out of your fifth round pick, I think that's usually a win.
Yes, certainly. Now going back to, of course, the Lions not taking Malcolm Brown, defensive tackle from Texas. Of course, that fell into the hands of the Patriots, many feeling as though the Patriots really got lucky and got a big steal in acquiring Malcolm Brown. When taking Lakin Tomlinson, I mean, of course, offensive guard and not going the defensive route, as you just alluded to, you know, when looking back at that move, what made Lakin Tomlinson such an appealing pick, and why Martin Mayhew decided to move down?
Well, I think it's just, you know, he's a solid player. He's probably not going to be a superstar. You know, no guards are, I guess, but he's a guy that fits their mold. He's a powerful blocker. He's a guy that you know, didn't miss any time during his career at Duke. Dependable, somebody that you can put out there. He played on the right side of Duke. He's probably going to play on the left side here with the Lions. But I think when the Lions look at their offensive line, with Tomlinson, a first-round pick this year, Larry Warford, a third-round pick 2 years ago, you know, they see that a young nucleus that should be together for a long time, throwing Riley Reiff at the left tackle spot and maybe Travis Swan to the center. You know, I think when they look at that group, now that Tomlinson is on board, they think this is a young nucleus that they're going to be able to build around.
Now, Dave, I want to bring up, of course, Amir Abdullah, a player who I got to see very closely here, of course, with us covering Michigan State football all year. Amir Abdullah, he's a pretty good running back, at least in college, on the college level. Do you think he's a great replacement for Reggie Bush, and how shocked were you that the Lions decided to draft him?
No, they liked him. I knew that. You know, I kind of put him on my every, you know, day one. We do a list of guys that could be the second-round pick, and he was one of the guys I put out there. You know, Tevin Coleman was the other running back that I thought it could have been. But Abdullah is, you know, he's the home run type threat that they were looking for the backfield. He's got some return ability, which was big for them. I know he's had some fumble issues in the past. The Lions don't seem quite as concerned about that. And maybe because, you know, they plan on having a multi-back system. I mean, it's something that Jim Caldwell, you can go back to his first press conference as Lions coach when he was hired. That's something that he said that he made a point of, that he wanted to have, you know, several different running backs that he could rely on. I think Abdullah is going to be one of those guys. This year he's going to share carries with Joy Bell. You know, theoretically you'll see him in there a little bit too, I guess, mostly as a receiver. But I think Abdullah is a guy that, for what they want to do with their running game, I think he fits. Now it's just a matter of if, you know, how well that athleticism, that home run ability translates to the NFL, and if he can get some of that room to run behind this offensive line.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Dave Burkett, Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer. Now, going back to Reggie Bush here, Dave, why do you think Reggie struggled here in Detroit?
Well, his injuries. I mean, you know, you go back 2 years ago, he ran for 1,000 yards, and that was the second, you know, 1,000-yard season of his career. So, and the first one by a Lions running back in a decade. So, I think he had some success that year, and then last year was just, the ankles really, he had two different, you know, high ankle sprains, and that really held him back. And he didn't have, I mean, he's 29 years old, so of course he wasn't going to have the same burst that he had a couple years ago. But I think what the Lions really wanted was to get younger and cheaper and maybe bring that speed element back to their backfield. And that's why at the end of the day they got rid of Reggie Bush.
Now, the loss of Ndamukong Suh, of course, is something that many Lions fans were a bit perturbed about, to say the least, Dave. Now, how bad do you think the loss of Ndamukong Suh will hurt this team?
Well, I think it's a big loss. I mean, I don't think there's any minimizing that. You know, he's the best defensive tackle in the NFL, and I'm on record, and I've said this plenty of times, I think the Lions should have done a lot more to keep him. You know, going back to last year, even before he became a free agent. But
And on that same token, Dave, what moves do you think they could have done to keep Ndamukong Suh? Because that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that echoed a lot. We even had, you know, Drew Sharp of the Free Press as well to talk about that, and he believes the same thing. The Lions didn't do enough to keep him. What should have the Lions done to keep to make sure he still down the Honolulu Blue?
Well, I mean, I think the way that they manage their salary cap, you know, in recent years, that's part of what, you know, made him have such a big cap number this year, which in turn made it impossible to use the franchise tag from their point of view. It made it impossible to use the franchise tag. I thought they could have still been used the franchise tag, you know, kept kicking the can down the road when it came to the salary cap. It's not something they wanted to do. So I think they could have done that. I think if they were more proactive a year ago in trying to sign him and offering him the biggest contract among, you know, for a defensive player in NFL history, I think something would have got done. We'll never know the answer to that. He says, you know, he was amenable to staying. The Lions think that they did everything they could. I think that's just one of those mysteries that will end up staying that way.
Now with Sue being gone, how do they sort of combat his loss?
Yeah, well, Haloti Ngata obviously is going to be the, you know, the guy that takes over sort of the face of that defensive front. You know, he's obviously a really good run stuffer, not quite the same pass rusher that Sue is. You know, I think there's a little bit of a drop off there. I don't think it's going to be a huge drop off. They don't have a whole lot of depth at that position right now. You know, I think they don't have, there's as good as Ngata is, you don't have to game plan for him and account for him like you did in Ndamukong Suh. So that defense doesn't quite have that same fear factor, I think, that it did with Ndamukong Suh running in the middle.
Yeah, I certainly agree. Now, of course, next year, I mean, you know, this team has a lot of talent on it. There's no, you know, ignoring that fact. And, you know, when looking at next season, what do you think is the biggest concern for this Lions team, Dave?
Well, I mean, you know, they do return the bulk of you know, the team from last year. I mean, they had a couple changes on the defensive line, of course, and that's really about it up front on defense. Offensively, it's the same thing. The changes are really on the line. I mean, I still worry about this offense a little bit and whether it will be able to consistently generate enough points. It surely didn't last year. You know, they had some issues moving the ball and putting the ball in the end zone last year, and I think they, you know, they need to get a little bit more out of Matthew Stafford this year. But that said, you know, I just, the defense carried them so much last year. I just don't know that the defense can do that this year when they play a tougher schedule. I would expect a small step back from the team. I don't think they're going to fall off by any means, but I don't know if they're going to be able to keep playing at the high level they did last year.
Now, Matthew Stafford is a guy who has a lot of toys to play with on that offense. I mean, how about Golden Tate last year? And, of course, playing with, you know, arguably, you know, the best receiver in the game in Calvin Johnson, who did have his struggles injury-wise last season as well. But you know, a lot of people are pretty harsh on Matt, saying that, you know, with that amount of talent on the offense, he should be more productive. What is your overall assessment of Matthew Stafford and his game, you know, the maturation of his game over time with the Detroit Lions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd fall into either of the two extremes. I wouldn't fall into either of the two extremes. You know, there's some people that think he's, you know, this Pro Bowl quarterback and, you know, the best thing that the Lions have done. And look, he's put up some phenomenal numbers, but I still think he has some room to grow. He still has some, you know, some deficiencies that have held his game back a little bit in terms of accuracy and decision making. But I'm not of the group that thinks that, you know, that the Lions made a mistake in extending him the other year and that they need to, you know, go a different direction at quarterback. I think in the NFL, it's such a tough position to find. You know, he's still a young guy. He's a very, very talented guy. You know, I can see him being the quarterback of this team for a long time. I just don't know. You know, he's not in that Andrew Luck caliber, that Aaron Rodgers, you know, group of quarterbacks. That elite, you know, tier of quarterbacks, and I just don't know that he's ever going to make that jump to that group.
You know, I always call it the it factor, Dave. I mean, when you talk about, you know, guys like Andrew Luck and, you know, Russell Wilson, what do you think separates those quarterbacks from those who have the potential to be that great but just haven't gotten to that stature? I mean, what is it about Matthew Stafford that doesn't put him in that category?
Yeah, well, on the field, I think it's back to, you know, kind of what I said, the decision-making and the accuracy. I mean, the accuracy was the one question that he had coming out of Georgia. It was never about his arm and arm strength and, you know, all those attribute to is really just, can he be accurate enough? And you see, even, I know he raises completion percentage, and Jim Caldwell likes to talk about that, but beyond just completion percentage, it's about where you place the ball and whether guys can run with it. And, you know, some of that decision-making, you go back to that throw on the pass interference call that was in the playoff game when he hit the linebacker in the back instead of Brandon Pettigrew. You know what, Calvin Johnson's streaking across the other side of the field open, and if Stafford makes a different read on that play, the Lions are going on to round two, and it doesn't matter. So
yeah.
I think there's things like that are holding him back.
Yeah, it's certainly the little things. Again, folks, we are chatting with Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer Dave Burkett. Now, Dave, do you think the window to make a legit run at a Super Bowl title is closing for this team?
No, I mean, I think as long as you got a quarterback that is in the upper half of the NFL, I think you got a shot. And I think that, Stafford does fall into that category. So, it's fair to say, obviously, with Calvin getting up there in age and no Sue, there's going to be some changes. And they're going to have to, reformulate this roster on the run. But I think Calvin still has a couple good years left in him. And, I think they've done a good job adding a couple of young pieces on defense, Ziggy Ansah, Darius Slay, guys that look like they're going to be core pieces of the defense. They just need, a couple more pieces up front.
All right, Dave, before I get you out of here, I want to talk about the draft as a whole, more specifically, of course, the number one overall pick in this year's draft, Jameis Winston out of Florida State. What do you think about Jameis as the first pick in this year's draft? And what do you think about him, his ceiling, I guess you can say, when he does enter the NFL? How good do you think he'll be?
Well, I wouldn't have taken him number one just for the off-field issues. I think there's, I think teams have to be cognizant of that and what it means for a franchise and, some of the things that go along with that. And I don't know that I would have risked it with some of the things that have gone on in his past. That said, he's a really talented player. I understand why, from that perspective, Tampa made him the number one choice. There's a lot of pressure to win now, and he's a guy I think that's better equipped to do that than Marcus Mariota. So Tampa is not a really good team right now. He has Mike Evans, so at least he has a pretty young and good receiver to grow with. But I think the Bucs are more quarterback away from contending.
What was your reaction when you saw that that picture with the crab legs after the draft?
Oh, I kind of laughed at that one. I thought that was kind of funny. There's obviously some immaturity there. That's not really the things that bother me. I think it's some of the more the accusations about the sexual assault. Those are the things that would have given me pause to take him on top.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer Dave Burkett. Hey, Dave, thanks a lot for your time today, man. Appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
All right. Gotta love Dave. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, folks, we'll wrap up today's current sports with Top 5 Tuesday, and we will list the top 5 overrated sporting events of all time. You don't want to miss that, folks. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We just finished up a chat with Detroit Free Press Lions beat writer Dave Burkett. I mean, we're looking at the overall draft for the Lions, Isaac. I just want to get your quick thoughts. I mean, of course, you talk about Lincoln Tomlinson, Amir Abdullah, Michael Burton, Corey Robinson, Alex Carter, Quandre Diggs, and Gabe Wright. When you look at it, I really thought the Lions addressed a few needs here. Specifically, the biggest question mark happened to be their offensive and defensive lines. With the absence of guys like Nick Fairley and Ndamukong Suh on the defensive line, and looking at how the Lions were among the worst NFL teams when it came to protecting the quarterback, hey, you got to draft linemen, right? And they addressed that need. I mean, Lincoln Tomlinson, his ceiling seems pretty, pretty high. Offensive tackle Corey Robinson, and even defensive tackle Gabe Wright. I think they addressed their needs. We'll just have to wait and see how good these guys truly are. Did you like what the Lions did?
Overall I did. I was surprised when they traded down the first time because I thought there were a lot of good guys on the board that would have fit their needs. However, getting an offensive lineman in the trade and then drafting Lincoln Tomlinson, I think it was overall a very good draft for the Lions, and they secured a pick for next year, which always helps.
Yeah, that is certainly true. All right, what do you think, folks? Again, only 5 minutes left in the show, so you can weigh in by simply going to facebook.com/currentsports, leaving me a comment there. I will read it live here on the show during tomorrow's Current Sports, and also even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Well, we got a quick Top 5 Tuesday for you. Of course, with the big fight happening on Saturday, a lot of people felt, as I did, underwhelmed. Not a great entertaining fight. It didn't live up to the hype. So we decided to look back and just look at sports as a whole and bring to you the top five overhyped sporting events. Here we go. All right, folks. Well, Top 5 Tuesday. Here are the top 5 overhyped sporting events of all time, okay? Isaac and I both have a list. I'm going to start with number 5 here, Isaac. The NFL schedule release is absolutely ridiculous. I hate how the NFL Network and even, you know, the major networks in sports, they dedicate like an hour or 2 hours to the schedule release. When one, we don't even know how good these teams are going to be. You get to see the Thanksgiving games and so on and so forth, you know, the Christmas Day games, all that kind of thing. Well, there's no games on Christmas in the NFL, but you know what I mean. You get to see the big holiday games and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's just a schedule. That's my number 5. Isaac?
My number 5 is similar a little bit. It's the draft for both the NFL and the NBA. You know, we wait for it. You watch it with friends. It's always disappointing. Your team never gets who you want. And there's 15 minutes in between picks. You know, you sit down, look forward to it, and then you're like, man, this is boring, you know?
Right. That is definitely true. All right, number 4, I'm sticking with the NFL here. NFL preseason football. It's like, come on, man. I mean, you don't get to see the starters play. There's really no eye candy appeal to it. Guys are fighting for positions, but I just think it's overhyped as well. But again, the NFL rules the world. I always say that. People just want to see football on their televisions, so they air all of these NFL preseason football games, which I really think need to be dwindled down tremendously. Isaac?
My number 4, going off earlier, is the Triple Crown, because I always think people overhype it. Way before we can start talking about, like I said, let's focus on the Preakness first. And then my number 3, I'm going to jump ahead to that one, is Super Bowls ending in that are multiples of 24. Super Bowl 24 had the largest margin of defeat in history when Joe Montana beat John Elway and the Broncos. And Super Bowl 48 was, of course, the Broncos versus the Seahawks, which was equally disappointing.
Wow, that's an interesting list. I like that. I did not know that. Hey, riddle me that, right? All right, for number 3 for me, any single game debut of a player I think is totally overhyped. Anytime a player is their first game and you want to see him, that you expect, you have these unrealistic expectations for him. That's my number 3. Number 2 for me, pretty much almost all bowl games out there, bowl games are just kind of a snooze unless they're like the top 4 bowl games and in the playoff, because I just feel like bowl games are just totally overhyped at the end of the day. And numero uno, I'm going with the slam dunk contest, man. Slam dunk contest. It's not like what it used to be. What about you, Isaac?
Well, number 2 for me, LSU-Alabama, the national championship when Alabama won 24-0 and LSU didn't even cross the midfield line. And number 1 is the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight.
I like it. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning into today's Current Sports. Hey, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.